2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Hey, everyone. JJ Cooper, Carlos Colazzo, Jeff Ponce here. Another Baseball America Prospect Podcast, Top 100 Prospects Podcast. But I will say, as I start this, if this is the first Baseball America Top 100 Prospects 2025 Prospects Podcast you're listening to, back up. We've already done. This is part two. And I'm not going to tell you that this is like a movie where you're jumping in and, oh, you're not going to be able to follow. But I am going to tell you, if you want to hear conversations about the top 10 of the top 100, that's what we covered in the first one. There was so much stuff that we really only covered the top 10 prospects, basically, in a 45-minute podcast/video. So now there's way too much to fit into one pod. We're doing another one here. But we're gonna start by saying, like, we've covered the top 10. That's not what we're here to talk about. Although we are going to start by talking about next year's top 10 or next year's number one, which is the topic, is the question that we get as soon as we put out a top 100. Everyone wants to know, why is so-and-so number one? But they really then want to know, okay, and who's going to be number one next year? And we get it. Like, that's what we love to do at Baseball America. So, Carlos, I'll start with you. If you're looking at this and you're looking ahead a year from now, who would you expect to see number one on the Baseball America 2026 Top 100 Prospects list?
Well, I'll say the player that gets me the most excited and who I think has the sort of upside to shoot into this conversation is Rangers shortstop Sebastian Walcott. This is the sort of prospect I think that makes this entire job fun to do. He is just a player that you watch him, you see the tools, and you just get excited about the potential superstar that he could be. So for you guys who don't know, I cover the draft here primarily at Baseball America, but I was receiving texts from scouts who just wanted to gush about Sebastian Walcott to me so many times throughout the year. That's not common. Mostly I'm talking about the amateur players. I'll talk pro players when I'm doing reporting for the Prospect Handbook. But the number of times scouts brought this guy up to me was kind of absurd. And then looking at the physical tools that he has, it's easy to see why. He hits the ball tremendously hard. He's a plus runner. I've talked to scouts who think he could be a plus shortstop. He's got a big arm. He's going to need to make adjustments hitting wise. I think that's pretty clearly the biggest question for him. He swings and misses a little bit too much right now. He'll go through stretches where he's maybe pulling out too much on breaking balls, just showing a better ability to pick those pitches up and make adjustments more consistently, I think is going to be a key for him. But he has shown the ability to make those adjustments in short flashes, in spurts, and just becoming more of a pure hitter. This is the tool shed. This is the athlete. This is the player you're going to want to dream on. This is not the elite pure contact hitter who, if he can just add a little bit more strength, he can level up. No, this is a guy who, if he can just get some more reps, see better quality secondaries, see more quality velocity more consistently, you're hoping that the hitting ability just ties all these absurd physical tools together and you really get a superstar. Because I tried to push Sebastian Walcott as far as I possibly could up my list. He still hasn't done it at the upper levels too much, although his very small stint in Double A was pretty good last year. So he's the guy that I get really, really excited about. And if that hitting piece really clicks over a full season, he's the guy for me.
Jeff, what about you?
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think that Sebastian Walcott is a tremendous pick, and I think has the tools and skills and upside to, you know, blossom into like almost a Fernando Tatis type of talent where, you know, maybe there's some questions in the swing and miss, but you're like, hey, this guy's walking at 13% rate. He's hitting for power. He plays a premium position. And even if he moves off a shortstop, probably falls down the defensive spectrum to still like high value defensive positions. Great athlete. And even when you compare like age to level, he's so much younger than his contemporaries for what he's doing that it's sort of remarkable. But my pick actually is not Sebastian Walcott, but a 2024 international free agent that signed, and that's Jesus Mate. That's who I had picked. I think that Mate to me is just such an unusual combination of skills and loud tools that you just don't often see this, particularly when you're focusing on the offensive production. You know, hit 331, 458, 554. That was a 169 WRC plus, so 69% better than his competition, which is pretty nice, of course. But the thing that stands out the most is he was the only player in the minor leagues this year with 100 or more plate appearances that put up these particular numbers. A miss rate below 12%, a chase rate of 15% or lower, and a 90th percentile of 104 miles per hour or higher. And I just want to put into perspective how high that 104 number is for a player that's 17 years old, turned 17 years old, by the way, a month before the DSL season start. So, I mean, this guy would be a draftee in another year, let alone now. And I think that's important to keep in perspective. Players that are 17 years old, the average 90th percentile exit velocity is 96.6 miles per hour. This is something that we fleshed out over the course of 4 years of advanced data across the entire DSL of everything that was recorded via our sources. So I'm very sure that this is several standard deviations above it. And you don't see contact guys, switch hitting contact middle infielders with that kind of power pairing with those sort of skills. Even if that tapers down a little bit when he touches full season ball, he's got such a grace period and such an error bar to still be a really productive hitter. I think the biggest knock on him is he's not hitting for a ton of power from the left side, gets on base, hits for a ton of, gets left-handed pitches from the right side. But from the left side where he's going to see a predominant amount of his at-bats, he hits for power, he gets on base, and he's a really tough out. And, you know, the feedback we got from the DSL scouts when Josh went down there and, of course, you know, spent a week down in the Dominican Republic, the feedback was this was the top guy. And I think, you know, might be sort of the heir to Jackson Churio of these fast-moving Brewers standout prospects. So I'm really excited about Jesus Mate, and it's an unbelievable name, just ready for New York Post-level punts.
I agree with both y'all's picks. I'm picking third here. So I'm going to go a little bit further off the board. And this is a tricky one. This one's really, I love this question. It's a fun one because the combination you need here is a guy who, okay, we're saying he's going to be a number one prospect. So he has to have tools, right? If you don't have tools, we're not going to put a guy who had a great year, but is old for the level, doesn't have a whole lot of tools. You got to have production. We never put a guy at number one who you're like, oh yeah, he really hasn't produced yet, but man, just what? Watch out. So you got to have that. And the third part, and this is the trickiest part, most of the guys who would start out by you're saying that this guy could be a candidate, if they have that good of a season to where they could be the number one prospect, they're going to graduate. I'm not going to throw Aiden Miller out to you because if Aiden Miller has the season that Aiden Miller would need to have to be our number one prospect, I'm kind of not envisioning them being like, he's destroyed every level we sent him to. It's August. We're in the playoff hunt. No, we have no room for Aiden Miller. He probably graduates. Bryce Eldridge, hard for a first baseman to be our number one prospect. But in Bryce Eldridge's case, if Bryce Eldridge mashes like he would have to mash to be our number one prospect, he's going to be in San Francisco midseason. So that's where this gets tricky. And that's where I'm going to go a little bit more off the board here. I'm going to give you two guys who are less likely to be our number one because I'm going to try to really give this, like, I'm going to throw darts here. Usually our number one is a top 25-ish prospect the year before, but I'll throw these two guys out just in case. One, another Brewer, Cooper Pratt. Cooper Pratt is better defensively than pretty much whatever you thought he was coming out of high school. He's been surprisingly good defensively. He's hit first, but who's going to come into power, we think. And if the power really kind of popped this year, he might graduate. But again, he was all last year in A ball, where it's like, okay, it's very plausible he could spend the entirety of 2025 in the minors to where he's top one, you know, he's top 100 eligible next year. So that's one where I think I really believe in the bat. And I think that you are talking about a shortstop who, okay, you know, it's a Brewer. Shortstop, third baseman, second baseman, who can play shortstop because that's the description of Bryce Terang, that's the description of Ortiz. They've got a lot of guys like this, right? So that's one. And the other one is Zahir Hope, who would fit this also from a standpoint of if you said who could have the Roman Anthony season in 2025, hasn't played above A ball, injury plagued 2024. When he's played, the underlying numbers are excellent. There's a lot to be impressed with here. Again, it's a corner outfield bat at the end of the day, probably, which is it's a profile that has to really be loud to be a number one prospect. That's why I probably won't be that. But if you told me that Zahir Hope is the guy who, healthy in 2025, destroys a couple of levels, leaves pitchers, you know, shivering in his wake, and at the end, and by the way, doesn't reach the majors, which probably won't in any scenario, he's another guy who at least could fit that kind of that combo pack where you're like, okay, there's a plausible path. And again, there just aren't that many players. I love Braden Taylor as a prospect, for example. There's no scenario where Braden Taylor, who's a good prospect, who spent a good bit of last year in A-ball, but there's no scenario where he could both be the number one prospect in baseball. Tool's probably not loud enough. But if he did, there's no way that he would still be in the minors and eligible for it, because he would have to have such a loud season that it'd be like, we can't keep him from playing at Steinbrenner Field. He's just too good. Those are that's a little bit more of admittedly a dart throw, but I think that those are good, two fun cuts. Names that way. That's already given us like 5-6 names outside of the top 10. But the next topic I kind of want to throw out to you guys is going to bring out some more of these names, which is, okay, who, I'll start with you this time, Jeff, who's a non-top 10 prospect in this year's top 100 who could pop? And by the way, Pratt, Mate, Walcott, and Hope are all off the board. So you got to name someone else.
Yeah. Put me on the spot a little bit here, JJ, but I have come ready and prepared. And that player for me was traded this offseason and arguably was ranked too low in the Cubs order. And frankly, if the Cubs order was redone based on the top 100, Cam Smith would be higher. He is our number one Astros prospect.
I'm just going to interrupt to say, you know, you got to completely blame that on whoever was the idiot who did our Cubs list. You know, well, like
I think what happened is, like, just those around the game, you know, we talked to a lot of scouts. We talked to people throughout the game. He was somebody that I think I actually boosted up what his draft score was, even. And that's no knock on Carlos at all. I mean, I just think that this player has rapidly improved since his freshman year at FSU. Even between his first game I saw on the Cape until the end of that season, took a tremendous step forward, took another step forward at FSU. He comes into pro ball. I think you can argue, because Kurtz got hurt, probably had the best debut of any 2024 draftee. He gets traded. And now the feedback that we're getting, you know, from front offices is pushing him even higher. And I think that's a guy that, when you look at the athleticism, you look at the bat to ball ability and, you know, the aptitude that we talked about in the first show of guys being able to get better as they're met with greater challenges. I think Cam Smith has really done that. It's outlier power. There's hit there. There's on base ability. There's questions about where he's going to end defensively, but he's a good enough athlete that, it was funny, I was reading Christian Yelich's draft report yesterday. He could be a corner outfield guy that runs a corner infield guy that runs well enough to move into the corner outfield and have a little bit of a career there as well. Big enough throwing arm that it's going to play from a corner outfield spot. He kind of fits that profile. So I think Cam Smith is really interesting. And I can tell you, covering the Astros, they're extremely enthusiastic about his upside and what they think they got in that return for Kyle Tucker. It was a nice piece to get and could be an ascending prospect and probably the best Astros prospect that we've had in 5 or 6 years. It's been quite a while, including Jeremy Pena and Gilbert and some of those other guys.
Okay, I'm going to put you on notice, Jeff. I'm going to come back around again, so we're going to do this one more time. But Carlos, how about you? Who's someone outside of the top 10 who you're really excited about?
Yeah, I will also go with the 2024 draft class, and I will take Nick Kurtz, Oakland A's. He's not quite as far down our list as Jeff. He's maybe a top 5 pick, is not really going out on a limb here. But Kurtz, to me, is a guy who I just am really excited about. I feel overwhelmingly positive about him. And the only thing that kept me kind of holding back a little bit before the draft was the fact that we've just had so many college first basemen get taken high. And then if they don't absolutely live up to their expectations as hitters, it's hard to be extremely valuable at the major league level, just given the competition they have at that position. We've seen guys like Jacob Berry and Andrew Vaughn and Spencer Torkelson. Like, you just have to really mash. I think the first test that Kurtz has passed is he looks like the exact same hitter we expected him to be in his major league debut. He continued to hit the ball extremely hard. He continued to show a great chase rate. He checks every box from a a hitter's perspective. He's a guy who makes a lot of contact. He makes really impressive swing decisions. He hits the ball hard. The only question I have now for Kurtz moving forward is, how healthy is he going to be? He's a guy who's dealt with injuries at times in college. He's had rib injuries. He's had foot injuries. So just staying on the field is going to be the question. But in terms of hitters that I feel extremely confident in on this top 100 list, Nick Kurtz would be at the very top. I just think he does everything so well. I think he's going to hit for average. He's going to get him on base. He's going to hit for power. We'll see how long he's actually in the minor leagues. I think he could be a guy who moves pretty quickly. But yeah, Nick Kurtz for me, I just feel a lot of safety and a lot of comfort in that profile.
I'm going to go with Luke Kuechel with the Twins, second baseman slash outfielder, really second baseman, can play multiple positions. He's been a really impressive hitter, you know, very quickly in his pro career. And I kind of even throw that with a little asterisk of the reason they kind of wasn't playing second base all that much last year was because he was playing with an elbow injury. They shut him down halfway through the season. So they had, you know, post futures game and all, so they could have Tommy John surgery, should be ready to go for 2025. And I do think that he has a chance. It's not that same exceptionally high ceiling. I think it's a extremely well-rounded player who could really be like an impact player offensively, hits for average, gets on base, some pop there, can run, could be pretty solid defensively as well, especially now that he should be throwing better than he was before because he obviously had an injury. I think this is a guy who it's pretty easy to kind of have him fly a little bit under the radar just because he did miss most of the second half of last year. But if you look at it and said, well, what's his ETA? I would say the answer is 2025. Just show that he's healthy. And there is a little bit of kind of figuring out how the Twins infield logjam works out because they do have Carlos Correa and Royce Lewis and Brooks Lee and Eddie Julian and, Jose Miranda. They've got a lot of second base, shortstop, third baseman. Kuechel could also play outfield again if needed. He's played there some, but there has to be a little bit of an opportunity there, or there has to be something that happens that creates that ability to get there. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if he went to St. Paul this year and just hit so much in the first half, just showed enough kind of as a well-rounded player that by mid-season, you're trying to figure out a way to create a spot for him. Because this guy, a lot of the guys we just hit on there, like, again, we had Edouard Julian, you know, we talked about him a couple of years ago, had a really good rookie year, kind of had a step back last year. But Julian is kind of a player where you know his limitations. He's worked really hard to get to be a playable defender. Kuechel's better than that. We talk about Correa, you know, we know Correa's probably going to miss some time. Royce Lewis, probably going to miss some time. Brooks Lee, probably going to miss some time. This is a team that could use a little bit of that. By the way, Willie Castro should have thrown in there too. They have a lot of guys for these positions, but I do think that Luke Kuechel is a guy who could kind of force his way into that discussion, especially if he kind of goes out in the start of 2025, much like he did the start of 2024, where he was really impressive before they had to shut him down. So I'm going to come back to you again, Jeff, for another. But by the way, I would say that you get the pass. You can pick anyone. Carlos and I are going to have to pick some guys who are outside of the top 50 this next time around. We now got to go to the top, but you did already. So you can pick anyone you want. We'll do that right after this quick break.
When spring training arrives, major league teams know that they have to have depth. They have to have contingency plans. No major league team goes into the season planning to have 5 starters make all the starts. Being prepared for life and life's events is even more important, which is why I have life insurance through SelectQuote to protect my family's financial future. SelectQuote is one of America's leading insurance brokers with nearly 40 years of experience, helping over 2 million customers, including me, find over $700 billion in coverage since 1985. Other life insurance brokers offer impersonal, one-size-fits-all policies that cost you more and cover you less. While SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents work for you to tailor a life insurance policy for your individual needs in as little as 15 minutes. You invest so much time to take care of yourself and to be the healthiest, best version of you. SelectQuote's exclusive policies can reward that effort. If you're in good health, they work with carriers that can give you the same-day coverage for up to $5 million with no medical exam required. And these policies are more affordable than you think. You can get coverage for up to $1 million for as little as $20 per month. Head to SelectQuote.com and a licensed insurance agent will call you right away with the right policy for your life and your budget. SelectQuote. They shop, you save. Get the right life insurance for you for less at SelectQuote.com/BA. Go to SelectQuote.com/BA today to get started. That's SelectQuote.com/BA.
And we're back. So, Jeff, I'm putting you on the spot again. Who's someone else in this 11 through 100 range, pretty wide range here, that stands out to you as a guy who you're really excited about, you know, really looking forward to see what they can do in 25?
Yeah, if you know me, you know I'm going to go outside the top 50, just like I did the first pick. I'm going to do it again. I like to turn the dial up to 11, you know, up the degree of difficulty here. A couple of names that popped out to me, but the one I'm going to go with is Theron Lorenzo, who was acquired by the Tigers from the Dodgers. Not often that the Dodgers trade somebody that turns out to be a standout. I do think that Lorenzo had a little bit of a down year, was dealing with some injuries and some other things, missed some time, came back in AFL. When you see how young this guy is and just how much impact he has as a switch hitter, a switch hitting, power hitting catcher that has 70 raw power, those guys don't grow on trees. From doing this job, I think one of the lessons I've learned the most is how much behind the scenes teams do value players that can hit, that are catchers. If there's even any glimmer of hope that a guy can stick behind the plate, and I think with Lorenzo that there's better than a 50% shot that he does, those guys can be, you know, worth their weight in gold. Lorenzo comes out, does what he did at the end of the season last year in the Midwest League once he joined the Tigers organization. I think he could be pushing up to the top of that list and maybe on the heels of Kevin McGonigal and Max Clark, two excellent prospects in their own right at the top of that list. So for me, I think Lorenzo is also a guy that you can look at and say probably not going to debut in 2025. So he's going to have that runway to move up the list and really, you know, prove that he is one of the top offensive catching prospects in baseball, if not the top one.
Back to you again, Carlos.
Yeah, so you stole my, I'll just shout out Angel Hanau because he is inside the top 50 and he's a player who I think probably is a little underrated relative to how we see him here at BA. So just check out Angel Hanau, but I'll go a little bit further down the board, not a ton further, because the guy that I settled on is Drake Baldwin, who's just outside of the top 50. But like Jeff said, catchers are extremely valuable. And I think you could probably look at every catcher on this list and find a catcher who has better tools in some area than Drake Baldwin does. He does not have the sexiest tool set. But I think what really separates him from maybe some other players or creates a lot of confidence in me, and I would expect that we're not going to have another chance to rank him or talk about him next year, just given his proximity and the fact that it seems like he's going to have a shot to play real time with the team, with the Braves this year. But Baldwin just does everything very well at a high level. He makes contact at a solid rate. He gets on base a ton. He hits the ball extremely hard. If you look at his just superficial numbers, his performance numbers from this year, it might not jump off the page to you. Both the environments he's playing in at Double and Triple A are power depressing environments, and he still did pretty well there. Behind the plate, he's made some impressive strides forward, handling a pitching staff. I think he's got the hands and the athletic ability and the mobility to move around and block at a solid level. His arm strength is maybe the weakest tool, like in a vacuum, that he has, but he also gets rid of the ball quickly, has good actions, throws with accuracy, and had a league average caught stealing rate. So I think he's just a player who's going to do a lot for you at every area of the game. He's not going to run, I will say that. That's probably his lightest tool, actually. It's probably a 30 runner, but you don't really need your catchers to run. At least I would hope not. I just think he's a guy who is going to give you on-base ability. He's going to hit for power. He's a left-handed catcher who can stick there. There are really no questions that I have about his ability to stick and be solid average. So this is a guy who I think can be a steady average regular, maybe slightly above average if the hit tool continues to just be better than people expected. Because, I mean, maybe the one area of his game that he improved the most in 2024, when it was kind of a breakout year for him in the upper levels, was his ability to make contact with spin. Secondaries were a question mark for him prior to 2024, but he really did a nice job adjusting to that pitch type, doing damage against that pitch type. So for me, Drake Baldwin is just kind of this very complete upper levels minor league catcher who is probably going to start making an impact on the big league game early in 2025.
My last one, I'm going to go with one that I kind of just want to explain him a little bit, partly. I know that I'm one of the high men out there on Trey Morgan, the Rays first baseman. I know that we're probably one of the highest as far as our rankings about Trey Morgan. And I want to kind of just lay this out, which is, if I said hey, there's this exceptional defensive first baseman in the minors. I can almost hear people like they're, you know, the snoring going on. It's like, wow. Yeah. Okay. But Trey Morgan really is. Which one of you sent me that video? Like, everyone can talk about the play he made, you know, against Wake Forest, where he makes the bunt play, and it's a great play. But Trey Morgan himself has laid it out to us. Like, I can make that play 100 times out of 100. But I think one of you guys shared with me on Slack a video of Trey Morgan going into foul territory and making a spinning throw to throw a guy out at second that I can only describe as it's a left-handed
spinning. Yeah. He was sliding and spinning, right? Like it was
sliding and spinning.
Yeah.
It can only be described as it's a shortstop making the play. In Trey Morgan's case, he happens to throw with his left hand. So unless you're playing slow pitch softball, you're not going to ever see anyone playing shortstop left-handed. So, you know, he is an infielder. He is a true, like, impact infielder playing first base. Okay, but that by itself would not be enough to make him a top 100 prospect. But I do also think that his combination of hitting ability and contact skills probably slides a little bit under the radar. This is the guy who does not strike out. This is the guy also who is basically like a 330 career minor league hitter. This is the guy who always hit at LSU. The concern, the question always has been, you want your first baseman to mash. And I get that. And I'm not going to tell you that Trey Morgan is a future 35 home run hitter who's just waiting to break out. That's not him. But if you said, give me the profile of this guy, what you're really talking about is you're hoping that he's going to be a Mark Grace type. And I know that there's a lot of people saying, wow, that's a really going back profile. There are not a ton of guys like this. How about this? He's a Luis Arias type, but way better defensively and with more power, kind of gap power, than Arias has shown for the majority of his time. Like, what we're talking about is he's not profile, but if he can hit for average, he can get on base, he can keep not striking out. And that's something that he's done throughout his minor league career. You know, last year he had an 11% walk rate and 11% strikeout rate in the minors. If he can do those things, and by the way, be a gold glove defender at first, it would shock me within 2 years of him in the big leagues that there's anyone out there better defensively than him at first base. I've heard people say, why didn't he play left field? And my answer always is because he's a 40 in left and an 80 at first. Play him at first. All that put together, I just think he's a really interesting prospect. A little bit maybe like higher floor, lower ceiling than some of the guys he's around on the list. But this isn't Evan White. This is a guy who's, you know, I think there's a better bat here. I think that this is a chance that this could all come together. And I bring that up. He's ranked 80th on our list. We are allowing that there's a small margin of error with a profile like this, right? If we're a grade too high on the bat, all of a sudden this becomes a lot less interesting. Let's be clear. If the power doesn't continue to develop a little bit, then all of a sudden it can be like, this just doesn't work out. But if you're a Rays fan and you're going to also say to me, how is this better than Jonathan Aranda? I'll tell you right now, if Jonathan Aranda could play defense like this, Jonathan Aranda would be a multi-year starter right now. Like that, I think it's as good, if not a better bat than Trey Morgan, but Curtis Meade hadn't worked out. These are the concerns we had. Curtis Meade doesn't have a defensive position. I don't have that problem with Trey Morgan. Now, I don't think he's going to just come in and take Yandy Diaz and hip check him out of the way, because Yandy Diaz is pretty good. But Trey Morgan is a guy who could be really interesting. And I think that that's kind of a fascinating way to flip into the next part, because that's a player I would say that Trey Morgan is kind of polarizing, even within, you know, our office when we discuss him. But explaining our process, one of the things we do, we put together our list. We're talking to people, scouts, coaches, analysts, front office officials, anyone we can all the way through the year. But then when we get our top 100 together, we then send it out to pretty much as many people as we can also to get feedback at that point as well before we roll it out. And the next question I wanted to ask, and I'll start with you, Carlos, is as we got that, and it doesn't just have to be from our feedback reports on that, but who are a couple of guys that stood out to you? Or who's a guy? Let's just do one. Who's a guy that stood out to you as either the feedback you got that we got kind of surprised, oh, it's really that favorable about this guy, or a guy, because we get a lot of this, especially you get to 75 to 150 on this list. Mm-hmm. And it's not shocking. These are guys who are not consensus. So it's not shocking that you'll get the feedback from one person will be like, why is that guy in the 100? And the next feedback you get from another team from someone else is like, you should move him up. That's good, but you need to move him up higher. So there's some mixed, but who's someone who jumps out to you is like, oh, we learn more kind of going through this process.
Yeah, the first one I'll mention, and this is a player who we got polarizing feedback from the industry. We had some people that reached out and said, hey, this guy maybe doesn't really fit in the top 100. We had some other people say you need to push him up from the spot where he's at, which is 74. And that's Thomas Harrington, who's a Pirates right-handed pitcher. I think it makes sense for him to be this polarizing. He is a pitcher who you probably look at the stuff and you're kind of wondering at the major league level, how many bats is he going to miss? At the same time, I think he's one of the better command pitchers in the minor leagues. We've got a 70 on his control. He's been a strike thrower for a long time. The delivery's pretty clean. He's always had good feel for the secondaries. He's continued to perform in the upper levels of the minors. I think if you just look at like the pitch data, Jeff might be able to give us a little more insight here, but it's not the most electric profile in the world. I don't know that he has like a banger breaking ball that is like a definite out pitch. He definitely doesn't have like a Kamar Rocker slider, although that's a pretty high bar to clear if that's what we're asking for all of our pitchers to clear. So he's one that just from the industry, it seems like a little bit polarizing. Another, I'm not sure if we got specific polarizing feedback on this round, but just in the time that I've been covering him, which is like a year plus now, Jack Caglione is a very polarizing profile. We have him at 63. I think you can make a case for him being a lot closer to Nick Kurtz on our list than where we have him, just because he's a player of such extremes. He hits the ball so, so hard, and he makes a ton of contact in zone. The chase rate is just exceptionally bad. Like, it's extremely, extremely tough. Maybe he's just one of these outliers where the contact ability and the power are so good that he's just going to be able to live with an approach like that. But when you pair a chase rate that's around 40% with a first base profile, I think he's the only hitter we have on our top 100 that has a hit plus metric below 100. I'd assume most of that is just because the chase rate is so high. I'm going to be looking at him and seeing if he makes adjustments to the approach in 2025. And I'm also going to be looking and saying, hey, is he just so extreme in the hit or in the contact in the power departments where he doesn't really need to? Because I could see an outcome where he just swings at everything and it works for him. So those would be two that I point out that are kind of in the back half of our list that are interesting and polarizing maybe.
What about you, Jeff?
Yeah, I think, one guy that kind of stuck out in terms of polarizing, and this was even conversations I had after the top 100 was out, was Travis Socorro of the Nationals. Had an outstanding season this year, really dominated the low A level. And I think there's some that view him as, you know, potentially headed to be one of the top pitching prospects in the game. And there's others that are kind of like, hey, let's pump the brakes a little bit here. He dominated low A competition. You know, there's maybe some questions about how that fastball and some of the stuff is going to play against upper level competition, the sequencing, that sort of thing. He was somebody that we did get move up feedback and move down feedback on. So he sort of fits into that threshold of, you know, polarizing type of players. And even had, you know, some responses of having a system mate Harlan Susana above him as well. So I think, you know, that's probably one. I'd say Demetrio Crisantes would be another that just throughout the industry, some sort of view him as, hey, maybe this guy doesn't have a whole lot of projection left. Others say, hey, this guy is, you know, entering next season with an opportunity to set the on-base record in the minor leagues that was set by this guy, Mookie Betts. I don't know if you know who that is or, you know, think he's any good, but pretty good player there. So he's an interesting one because he dealt with some injuries. Took him a while to get going. He was kind of 2 years behind sort of his draft class in terms of where, you know, how he had progressed through the minor leagues. We got move up feedback and move down feedback on him. And I think that he truly is one that is polarizing throughout the industry. If you even look at some other rankings that are out there.
I'll throw out two. One, I'll just throw out that's not really as polarizing as in a guy who would not have been on 100 without the feedback was George Lombard Jr., who I would say that no one got more consistent. We had him just outside of the 100 in our preliminary one that we sent around. And it was almost like everyone we got back was like, oh, Lombard's a top 100 prospect. You know, it's hard to, he's a guy who, his season, if you look at his season and you just look at it without adjusting for the level and the league, which is a really pitcher heavy league, you might look at it and say, what are you seeing here? Because George Lombard's just like surface level numbers are not that impressive, but the FSL is a graveyard that's almost impossible to hit home runs. It's almost impossible to hit for average. There's a lot of attributes, but his tools are really good. Scouts were very impressed with him. I would say the underlying metrics are better than the, you know, the surface line numbers for him. So you put all that together and he moved in because we just kept getting consistent feedback of that is 100% a top 100 prospect. The other one I'll throw out is kind of a one that's been polarizing for a while, which is Justin Crawford. Because Justin Crawford, I would say we kind of know a lot of what he is at this point. And the question is are you focused on the weaknesses or the strengths, right? Because the strengths are that Justin Crawford hits the ball hard. He hits for average. He's athletic. There's an impact there on the base paths and all that. The downside is Justin Crawford hits the ball hard into the ground. And he's made improvements on that, which has just removed him from being like off the screen if you were showing a distribution of ground ball rates to being like at the very high end of ground ball rates. So he's shown improvements, but it's really just not something where you can say, oh, I feel extremely comfortable that this guy's going to next year have a swing tweak and all of a sudden he's going to be, you know, hitting those rockets are going to turn into line drives and home runs and all that. But that said, he is a really good hitter and there is athleticism. And so I would say that he's polarizing. Kind of not, if you are eye of the beholder, you could say like, oh, no, he's still young. I'm confident that he's going to develop those skills. And if he does, watch out. I would say that the kind of the more moderate view is he'll continue to make some improvements on these traits. They will continue to be kind of a little bit limiting for him, but he could be a productive player with these. And, you know, again, if you look at his dad would be kind of the 99th percentile version of this. His dad did hit the ball on the ground less, but he did hit the ball on the ground. He wasn't particularly a power hitter. He was a left fielder, not always a center fielder. He stole a ton of bags, hit for average, and was a really productive player for a very long time. And then I would say that the really low-end version of that is these are the flaws that are eventually going to keep him from being that kind of player. There's a reason he's at the back of this list. He's not number 35 or something. When you get to that 75 to 100 range, I always like to say, like, there's a reason they're there. Like, there's multiple reasons. One reason could be that a guy just hasn't had the track record yet, right? You see everything you want to see, but at the same time, he's just done it in the DSL or he's just done it in the complex or whatever, and you're waiting to see him kind of show he can do it against more advanced competition. Another version of that is the guy, the really skilled guy who you just know that the tools are going to limit them. I would even say like Thomas Harrington, like that Carlos, you know, pointed out is an example of this, right? Thomas Harrington is doing everything you could want him to do, but there's still going to always be that little bit of hesitation of like, is the stuff good enough for this to be more than a number 5/6? So you have guys like that. And then the third group are the group that's like, we're kind of getting a feel for what this guy is. Here's the if statement of where this could go wrong. And here's what he does well. And again, Crawford's a guy like that. Xavier Isaac, who's in this range, is a guy you're like, at Xavier Isaac's best, he's really good. At Xavier Isaac's worst, which we saw in AA last year, he's striking out too much for any of it to work. So like you're saying, okay, we want to see him make a step back from that. You have a guy like a Starlin Cava, who's like the best defensive shortstop in the minors. Is he going to hit enough? There's all Harry Ford. Is he going to be able to catch, or is he going to be more of a corner outfielder? And then is this enough? There's a ton of these guys in this range where you're like it's funny. The way I would put it is that you can absolutely quibble with us on a lot of these rankings, and trust us, we quibble with each other about them. We're trying to make them the best they can be. And a lot of times it's not even that you're disagreeing about the assessment of the player. We'll always talk about read the report, read the report, read the report. Sometimes it's all laid out in the report and we're just putting our odds, our percentages on what the outcome is, maybe a little differently than you, the reader, is doing so. Like we may say that, like I laid it out with Trey Morgan. Okay, I'm making the optimistic case for Trey Morgan where I'm saying, I think that there's a 40% chance that his defense, his hitting ability, his on-base ability makes him a three-war first baseman or better, even though first base is a really tough profile. But also take a look at first baseman in the big leagues. He could be better than a lot of them. Okay. You could be someone looking at the same report, agreeing with me on much of it, saying, you know what? I think he's going to be Carlos there. And being like, I think he's going to hit 270, 260. And if he hits 260, 330, 380, yeah. I don't care how good he is defensively. Is that really what you want in your first baseman?
What?
That all kind of fits in here. I'll kind of throw that back to you guys about kind of like, that's what's fun about this is trying to figure out those outcomes.
I was going to say, I think a lot of the players, and maybe, I don't know where it starts for you guys, but really like 60, maybe 50 to 60 through like 150. I think there are players that we probably all agree on like the facts and the profile and we agree on the tools and we just disagree on like what the realistic outcomes are. Like there are a lot of players in this range that like you read the report and we're like, yeah, that's who this player is. And we'll just have very different opinions on where that player slots in. So it's almost the most fun range to talk through these players, because this is where the opinions diverge both within our office, within the industry. You can have very wide ranges of players at this point.
That's a perfect segue to our final segment, which is we wanted to talk about guys who are not currently in the top 100. And again, like we just laid out, if you want to say to us, I think so-and-so's should be 95 on this list, and we're talking about them now, there's that much difference. When we talked about industry feedback, you know what the thing that does stand out? We get it sometimes, but we didn't get any industry feedback that was like, this guy who's in your top 10, you're crazy. Pretty much on that, there's much more consensus on guys at the top of this list than there is at the back. If you want to say so-and-so's 4 and I think he's 10, okay, that's all kind of in the same tier. If you want to say so-and-so's 6, I think he's 8, no big difference. At the back of this list, I may think a guy's 125, you may think he's 80. There's a smaller difference there than there is between 2 and 15 on this list. So Jeff, who's a guy to you not currently in the top 100 who you think could soon be a top 100 prospect?
Well, I'm the right guy to go to, because 6 of the top 15 outside the top 100 were players that were in my systems that I wrote up or ranked. So I'm going to throw one out here in terms of Arjun Namala. We got really good feedback from Namala throughout the second half of the season, even some surprisingly good feedback as I started to get into handbook season. And it probably was more of a question as to how Namala, Yu Savage, and Ricky Tiedemann, who ultimately was one, probably my fault there, lined up. And I think the thing with Namala is his initial landing in pro ball, meaning this season, not last year where he had a cup of coffee in the Florida Complex League. But coming out of spring training, there were some whispers throughout the organization that he's had a great camp. He just hit a home run in a major league game. The pressure's on us to assign this player to a full season level. He was very young for the class. The tools and the skills are there, but we do think that he could benefit from some additional instruction at, you know, extended spring training, and then sort of moving him to Dunedin. They didn't do that. They assigned him to Dunedin. He struggled mightily out the gate, brought him back to extended, put him into the Florida Complex League for a few games, comes back, and was great. From that second half on, I believe he had more extra base hits than any other teenager in pro ball in the second half. Really put up good numbers there. Impressed on the defensive side of the ball as well, where I was getting 55 to 60 grades across the board on the glove and on the arm. And I think when you look at a player like this, that's a shortstop who can hit for power, get on base at a pretty good clip. There is some swing and miss, but I think you'll take that when he does have, you know, the potential to be an above average shortstop at the major league level. still super young, all things considered. So he's one that I'll call out, and I'll even say that I kind of came around on him due to some of the feedback and then digging in on some of the things that I was hearing from scouts and front office officials as I was doing the Blue Jays list. And he just missed the top 100.
Carlos, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go for Cam Collier of the Reds. For me on my list, I had him inside the top 100. I've been pretty high on him dating back to his time as an amateur player out of the draft. It's funny. It feels like Collier's been around for a while. He was drafted 2 years ago and in 2022 in the first round, and he just turned 20 in November. If you look, like, I have quite a bit of separation between Collier and a guy like Trey Morgan, who I had a little bit further down on my list. Collier this year in his age 19 season in high A hit as many home runs as Trey Morgan did in 3 years at LSU in like the absolute hottest environment in college baseball. So it's 20 home runs this year. I do not in my mind think of Cam Collier as a third baseman now. I like him despite like feeling very strongly that he's going to slide over to first base and that's ultimately his position. I just feel a lot more confident in his hitting ability and his ability to get to power and to profile as a first baseman than I would with someone like Trey Morgan, who does a lot of things on the field better than Cam Collier. I think for Collier, like the hitting ability, the pure hitting ability hasn't been quite as good as I expected it to be coming out of the draft, but it's still been pretty solid. He's walked at a pretty solid rate to this point in the minors. The power is plus. I know there are some scouts who think he's got a chance to play third base, but I think you just put him at first and let him mash. The fact that he's going to be playing his 2025 season as a 20-year-old, I think gives him a lot of like flexibility in terms of just the development path that he has moving forward. And in some ways, I think there's almost been some prospect fatigue with Collier because the year he put up was pretty solid. He's been on the top 100 for us before. He does feel like he's maybe slightly polarizing. It's a little bit of an unusual swing, and the body is what it is. I ultimately think he's just going to have a lot of power and hit for enough impact to profile really nicely at first base. And again, he was like almost 3.5 years younger than the average hitter in 2024 and 2023. And overall in pro ball, I think the production has been pretty good. Seeing that in-game power jump from 6 to 20 this year, I think was encouraging because you always saw solid exit velocities, but the fact that he started to actually get that performance in game is encouraging. So he's a guy that I'm just a little bit more bullish on the hit power combination.
I'm going to end this with two guys in the same organization. I'm not even going to talk about Chandler Simpson. I already talked about Trey Morgan. I'm not going to talk about Chandler Simpson. I could, but I'm not going to do that. We'll do that in a different pod. But Braylor Guerrero, another outfielder in the Rays system, he's not a top 100 prospect right now. I don't want to make the case for him. I don't think he really has a case to be a top 100 prospect at this moment. But by midseason, I also think that he could easily be on this list. If a healthy Braylor Guerrero goes out in the first half and just mashes, I think you are going to get – we heard last year he battled injuries, but when he was on the field, his hitting ability really did jump out. Like, this is a guy who could absolutely be kind of a middle-of-the-order masher if it all breaks right. Long ways away, you want to see him kind of do it for a longer stretch than he's gotten to do so far, but he's one that jumps out. And then I'll raise my hand as the idiot who did the Rays list. I didn't even have Brody Hopkins in the Rays top 10 right now, but I also think that Brody Hopkins could easily be a top 75, top 50 prospect at some point this year. The Rays list is really hard to line up because they have a ton of guys who are close to the majors. And I did go with some of the more like closer to the majors guys ahead of the guys like a Hopkins, who is really intriguing, was a position player who pitched a little bit until very late in his college career. Drafted by the Mariners, exceptional athlete. The stuff really does jump off the, you know, jump off the scouting report, jump off the spreadsheet. And then the questions are, is like, okay, you just want to see a longer track record. You want to see him continue to improve the control, continue to improve the command. I would say like the chances of Brody Hopkins not being an interesting reliever if healthy is really low. The chances of him being a really interesting starter are getting higher and higher, but at the same time, I would just say we're not there yet to be like 100%. Like, if you're comparing him to a Gary Gilhill, Trevor Harrison, some guys like that who are in the same organization, I would say that I have a little bit more comfort with their starting ability, especially maybe a Harrison. Hopkins could end up being better than those guys, though. Exceptional athlete, And even though he's older, he just has a lot less pitching in his background to where this could continue to blossom. We could keep doing this for, you know, we could do part three, part four, part five, part six. We love talking about this stuff, but we do hope that you enjoyed part one and part two. Again, if you listen to this one first, go back and watch part one. If you enjoy this, I promise you'll enjoy that. And along those lines, if you enjoyed this, I promise you would enjoy a subscription, baseballamerica.com. Full reports on every one of these players we talked about. And by the way, for years in many cases, like we have them all up on their player cards. If you're a subscriber, you can say, you know what, you want to talk about Cam Collier? You can see what our our draft report for him was when he was reclassified and became a junior college player. We can see what his report was after his first year in pro ball and his second year, and now his third year. Guys like that, you can see that kind of that track record of how things have changed on a player. We have all of that, baseballamerica.com. And again, we do appreciate if you subscribe to us or podcast or on YouTube, we appreciate it. Please, you know, like, subscribe, and leave comments if you want. We do read them. We do try to respond to them. Baseball America here on the YouTube, here on the podcast feed, and also baseballamerica.com. For Carlos and Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.
Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure. Let's talk about something that might be keeping you up at night. Cybersecurity. According to Vanta's latest State of Trust report, it's the number one concern for UK businesses. That's where Vanta comes in. Whether you're a startup, growing fast, or already established, Vanta can help you get ISO 27001 certified and more without the headaches. And Vanta allows your company to centralize security workflows, complete questionnaires up to 5 times faster, and proactively manage vendor risk to help your team not only get compliant, but stay compliant. Stop stressing over cybersecurity and start focusing on growing your business. For a limited time, our audience gets $1,000 off Vanta at vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off. Because when it comes to your business, it's not just about keeping the lights on. It's about keeping everything secure.